matter of.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 120 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Sarovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Kellyanne Healy. Hello, Kellyanne.
Hello, Allison. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Kellyanne.
Hello, hello.
So this is our first podcast since the season started. So the opening series is now in the books. The Mets won 3 out of 4. It should have been a 4-game sweep.
It's just...
But, you know.
Yeah, no, it should have been a sweep. Sorry.
Should have been a sweep. But they won 3 out of 4. It was still good. You know, there was some fireworks in that first game, first series. The Nationals relievers have poor command because the Nationals are not a very good baseball team. And so they hit several Mets with pitches, three of which were actually up by the head, two of which actually made contact with our dudes' faces. It wasn't quite a Kevin Pillar situation, thank goodness. But, you know, Pete got kind of hit in the mouth, and Francisco Lindor also kind of got hit in the mouth. And so the Mets obviously were not too pleased with that, given the cumulative effect of, I think, the 4 or 5 hit by pitches total, 3 of which were head high.
Looks could kill, Buck Showalter would the entire Nationals dugout would have been wiped out if looks could kill.
Yes. I think the summary of Buck Showalter's managing so far has been, you know, he's very sassy, but his bullpen management has not been there yet. But I guess we'll see.
I was going to say, but we can say that about every single past manager we've had. So that's nothing new. I wish it would change, but
there's no such thing as a good
My age. Kingdom for a manager with knows how to manage a bullpen.
I know, right? It's and I mean, there have been also several lineup decisions. I mean, basically the crux of the issue early on has been that he's trying to load manage guys, both in the bullpen and, you know, the position players, which I understand because it was a short spring. So you need a lot of rest for guys early, but he's not spreading it out properly. Instead, he played Luis Guillorme and Travis Jankowski. He started them both in one game, which one should really not do. Starting one or the other is probably fine to give of the outfielders some rest or one of the infielders some rest, but both at the same time, a little eh. And then similarly with the bullpen, the big issue with the one loss against the Nationals was that he was hell bent on using, Trevor Williams in that game because he hadn't been used yet. And the other guys had been used too much. So he was all right, Trevor Williams, you're getting in this game, but he brought him in a tight situation. And he was not successful. And honestly, it wasn't really Trevor Williams's fault. Trevor Williams didn't pitch that poorly. He induced the double play grounder that would have gotten him out of the inning with the game still tied. He came in with the 1-run lead. But Pete Alonso made a bad defensive play, as you know, will happen sometimes to everyone. That lengthened the inning.
He bopped 2 in that inning though, which is not great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, he gave up the go-ahead single, but even that was the go-ahead RBI single, but even that was not super hard contact. But the point is that you shouldn't be putting a dude who doesn't miss bats like Trevor Williams in a situation where you have a 1-run lead in the late innings. It's just not a formula for winning.
Well, and he'd already pushed Chase and Shreve an extra inning too.
Yeah, he did.
And he gave up the leadoff hit that inning.
He did. Yeah.
Real Muto just chased Chasen. He struck out.
Excellent. Speaking of Chasen Shreve.
Strike.
Speaking of Chasen Shreve, he just, got out of the end of the 6th inning. So that's good. But yeah, Chasen Shreve came in the game earlier. in the loss against the Nationals, and you know, did well to get he managed the like taking out the starter at the appropriate time because Chasen Shreve came in with two outs to face Juan Soto and got Juan Soto out. But then Chasen Shreve pitched a whole nother inning scoreless, good for him. And then he
barely because Nelson Cruz almost took him deep.
Yes. Oof. Nelson, he left him in to face the righty Nelson Cruz, and Nelson Cruz absolutely rocketed one to the freaking warning track. Luckily, that stayed in the park. But then he came in to lead off the eighth inning. He came in to lead off the eighth inning too, because there was a lefty leading off that inning, but he gave up a hit to the lefty. And then Trevor Williams, you have the tying run on base. You bring in, instead of, you know, bringing in someone like Trevor May, who we'll get to in a minute, or someone else who misses bats more often. Like, I know that Trevor May has homer problems. He gave up the home run to Juan Soto in that series in which he did appear. But like, you know, you need a guy who has a higher strikeout rate than Trevor Williams in that situation. And Trevor Williams just gave up some contact, albeit not that hard, but gave up some contact. And the result was that, you know, the Mets ended up losing that game. Also, Pete Alonso
had been up that game.
Yes, and May was warming in the seventh, and so he buck dry humped him, which was not ideal. And then that came back to potentially, who knows if that was like the reason, but that obviously came back to bite Buck later, because Trevor May ended up coming out of the game yesterday, which yesterday was even more of a disaster than Sunday. Trevor May ended up coming out of the game because he got injured. But like, it wasn't, Trevor May didn't seem too concerned about it. It was like just a kind of like a weird, like biceps tightness, soreness. He says that he experiences it a lot, like later in spring training, but usually he like is able to work through it. And that's just like part of his ramp up process. But, you know, again, short spring training, these guys aren't used to this. And also this was the first time in like 2 years that Trevor May was asked to pitch more than a full inning. So, you know, that came back to buck in the butt. Oh my goodness. Say that 5 times.
Butt in the butt.
So
buck butt.
Buck butt. I think that's what we should call any of Showalter's future goofs. Buck butts.
Buck butts. So yeah, you know, the first series was, I think, overall a positive, even though Sunday's game should have been a W and ended up not being. But I think you could have come out of that series overall feeling like pretty good about the Mets, especially, you know, they pitched really well. The starting pitching did, obviously, you know, Tylor Megill, who pitched really well again tonight as we podcast on Tuesday night. In game two of the Phillies series, Tylor Megill pitched really well on opening day. And, you know, the rotation has done great so far. Obviously, we also have another complicating factor in the fact that Taijuan Walker, Taijuan Walker came out of the game yesterday early, which is part of what caused the problem.
Especially Taiwan. When he was cruising.
I know. He was pitching.
He looked really good.
I was like, holy crap.
He looked really good. So he and May both came out of the game with injuries in the same game, which was disastrous, in addition to the goings on of the game, which were disastrous. and so the news on both of them is that Trevor May, as of this moment, is not on the injured list. He's just experiencing this, like, you know, like minor biceps tight soreness strain thing. And Taijuan Walker was diagnosed with shoulder bursitis. So he is going on the injured list. Now, that's not good. The only bright side of that is that David Peterson came in long relief of Taijuan Walker and pitched really well in that game yesterday. And it will obviously be his turn to come up. So in theory, he is the guy that's being penciled in, although Buck has not said for certain that he is making that start that Taijuan Walker will miss. So we'll see. But there were kind of, yesterday's game was basically a hot mess on both sides.
For different reasons. Really? Really?
The hottest of messes. And I saw a tweet that was that was like encapsulated it all perfectly, but it was basically like, we need science to study how we've reached peak Mets and peak Phillies at like warp speed this season already, which is so true.
I really wish it wasn't though.
Yes.
Yeah, I was gonna say no. Well,
we're not even a week in.
Let's blame short spring training, but B, maybe we'll get it out of the way early. Get it out of our systems, maybe, because it's like not even a weekend and this is happening. And
like, yeah, maybe they're going like we're the opposite hard, so. This year. Like maybe they'll be bad in April and then good in June.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, like that. DeGrom's coming back.
Yeah,
I'm okay with that. I would like not to see a June swoon.
That'd be great. That'd be great. I mean, I don't know. Like, so to sort of break down the hot mess of a game yesterday, the Phillies hot mess was in the first part of the game and the Mets hot mess was in the latter part of the game. So the Phillies hot mess was early on. Alec Bohm made three errors in like the span of like two or three innings. It was really rough to watch. And he was seen and like the big controversy, which has become a controversy, but I guarantee you, if this was a Met, oh my God, the New York media, this would have been like, this would have blown up.
Lose their shit.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
It would have been so bad. I mean, think about the thumbs down thing. It's basically the equivalent of that, except I would argue it's even worse than that. And like it, you know, it's barely, I mean, it's being discussed on like Twitter and stuff, but I think it's going to be like over after this basically, but
because they won the game.
Yeah. They won the game, which helps.
Yeah. Winning is a balm for a lot of things.
Well, I mean, think about it. Like the thumbs down controversy was a thing for the Mets. And then Javi Baez had that game where he was the big hero and then it went away. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So this is like a very similar thing because Alec Bohm ended up offensively contributing to them winning. So, yeah. After Alec Bohm made all those, they were all throwing errors. Like basically he can field the balls. It's just a question of like his throwing arm. He doesn't throw very accurately, like across the diamond. So three different times he like threw the ball away, and allowed the Mets to, you know, score a lot of runs that way, get the early lead. And he was seen, you know, I think this was on the Phillies broadcast. Cause I don't remember seeing it on SNY, but on the Phillies broadcast, he like, walked past, was it Gene Segura or Didi Gregorius? I can't remember.
It was Didi Gregorius.
Yeah. He was like walking past Didi Gregorius on the way back to the dugout, I guess, or like after one of the plays happened. And he can be like, people read his lips and basically he said, I fucking hate this place, as in Philadelphia, Citizens Bank Park, which, you know, same.
but also humans are going to human in the moment, like exactly. The heat of the moment.
And
like,
you know, whomst among us.
Seriously.
He might be the most relatable Philly right now.
I mean, right? Extremely relatable. It got to the point where, like, I mean, it was, as fellow Mets fans were saying, this is great content, but I feel bad. And that's basically
Keith Hernandez was saying it too. He was like, it's clearly in his head.
Yeah.
I mean, because he was double tapping on throws and it was not pretty.
He looked like he was going to cry. It made me feel
bad. Yeah, he did.
But obviously, you know, now I'm sure he's like, you know, he feels better now because the Phillies won. So who cares? Mm. But, you know, to Alec Bohm's credit, he like after the game, you know, he owned up to it. And like, which was funny to me because like, I was kind of like, oh, you know, why didn't you just lie? And be like, oh, no. It was, I fucking hate these plays. Like, it would have been very easy for him to just lie, but he didn't. To his credit, he didn't.
I was going to say, I like that he didn't.
And he said, like, I said move. It was the heat of the moment. I'm really sorry. Like, I don't mean it. Like, I really love playing with my fans. I know, he meant it. But he said he didn't mean it. And he was like, you know, I know the fans just want to win. You know, it was just a heat of the moment thing. And I think that people, like, you know, even, I think the Phillies fans, like, respected him for that. So, you know, it's a controversy that's probably going to go away, especially because the Phillies ended up winning the game. because the Mets melt a bullpen complete meltdown in the second half of the game in the eighth inning again. The eighth inning has been very doom, which is why I'm nervous, because the eighth inning of this game today is yet to happen.
It's not yet happened.
Well, it didn't help that Diaz was also on the bereavement list.
That
kind of threw things off too.
That didn't help with all the bullpen issues. You know, obviously Buck has made some questionable bullpen choices, but Edwin Diaz was unavailable on Sunday and also last night. And so, you know, obviously Trevor May had his early exit, but Seth Lugo was absolutely dreadful and had a bad day. And I don't know, like, obviously, like, one cannot draw any conclusions in April about much of anything. I don't know if Seth Lugo isn't good anymore as a Seth Lugo defender. I would feel sad about that. But I think what it does say, I don't think it says anything necessarily about Seth Lugo, but I think what it does say is that the Mets should have done more to, you know, bolster this bullpen, and they didn't.
Yeah.
And we all knew that. We all knew that was good. That was going to be a weakness going in. And they just like, were like, uh-oh, we need a lefty. Let's randomly trade for somebody quick.
And Joely Rodriguez also pitched poorly in that game.
Yeah. And the Yankees were already concerned about a drop in velocity over spring. So they traded for somebody who the Yankees were already concerned about.
Yep. It's like, and we were, I know I can already hear people screaming in response. He's on the IL, so it wouldn't have mattered. But like, we were begging the Mets to sign Andrew Chafin. And I know that he's on the IL. So, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. Yeah. But like, we were
still
begging the Mets to sign Andrew Chafin. I was begging the Mets to even sign like Tony Watson. Like, that would have been better than trading for Joely Rodriguez, like, and trading away Miguel Castro, who could have been
good against lefties.
Yeah, what the heck was what the heck? I'm sorry. Woo, excuse me.
So Miguel Castro had one of the best ERAs against lefties last year.
I know. It just makes no sense.
You didn't need to trade for a lefty.
Just a goof move all around.
It just makes no sense. Front. And now you have dudes dudes like Rodriguez, who, you know, is good against lefties, but should literally never face a righty. And you have
a loogie in a world where there's no loogies anymore.
Exactly. You have him when there's a 3-batter minimum. And it's just like, I don't know, man. It's the bullpen's already looking like a crack in this. And I mean, you know, the offense has looked pretty good, but not to bail them out entirely. They should have scored more runs against literally Eric Fetty and, you know, literally Ranger Suarez, like, and the Phillies bullpen.
That was the other issue, is he left Cano and Nimmo in to face lefties when you had JD Davis on the bench.
Yeah.
Dumb.
JD Davis had over 400 average pinch hitting last year. This is kind of his thing.
Yeah. And it's like, if you aren't pinch hitting JD Davis in those situations, like, what's he on the team for? Like, that's literally his role. And you are like taking away what little role he has. Like, that's should be his role. I mean, I think it's like, part of it is that you have a DH league now, like everybody is the DH, and you pinch hit a lot less in DH leagues because you're not pinch hitting for the pitcher anymore when you're taking him out. So like, you know, that is part of it, but it doesn't excuse it. You should still utilize your pinch hitters. You should still utilize your guys on the bench.
Buck said then he was afraid, like, then the Nationals would counter with a righty. Who cares? JD against a righty is more successful than Cano against a lefty.
Yeah, probably.
Anything is more successful than Cano right now. I mean, he's just, Cano's clogging up the works.
Yeah.
Majorly.
He's playing way too much.
Yeah, I wonder.
Way too much. He's DHing when other people can be DHing. It's just, it's not good.
I wonder how long, A, he keeps, like, playing all the time, and B, like, you know, absent that, I wonder how long he keeps, like, hitting, like, fifth in the lineup, or fourth.
Which is another, he should be eighth or ninth.
Yeah.
Yep.
At like, best, he should be eighth or ninth right
now.
You
gotta drop him in the lineup. And like, Buck keeps hitting Cano, like, fourth, fifth, whatever, and then McNeil eighth, and McNeil is like
which is
looking
dumb.
Like McNeil
which is the
again
dumbest. Yeah, I just ugh.
I get it. McNeil didn't have a good year last year, but he's looking like Jeff McNeil.
That's an anomaly.
And he should be hitting higher in the order. I'm not saying McNeil should be like leading off or anything, but he should be hitting like
higher.
And Cano should be hitting lower and or not playing as much.
If at all.
Like, I get Cano had a good spring, but come on.
He did have a good spring, but he didn't show any power. He was just
and that could still be like leftover from whatever was in his bloodstream there. Cause I think, doesn't that one last for over like a year afterward?
Oh, I don't know.
Like the effects of it. I could be wrong.
Possibly. But
McNeil and Marcan are the only ones doing anything really.
But
besides the Grand Slam of Pete.
Yeah. But Pete's Grand Slam.
Even the rest of the offense hasn't really like clicked.
Eduardo Escobar has a few doubles.
Okay.
And Lindor's hitting well.
Yeah, he hit the home run.
Yeah, he hit the home run, and he's hitting the ball hard. I think the offense is doing solidly.
But I still feel like Guillorme's playing way too much. Like the bench players are playing way too much. It's a week. Why are you playing these bench players in?
Guillorme started twice already, which is too many
times. And JD's only played once as DH as a starter, and Guillorme's played twice, and you wonder why you have no offense?
I mean, Guillorme did put on a defensive clinic in the second game he played, which is why he's here.
Yeah, it's his defense.
He can't have no offense that way. I mean, the dude can't hit.
Yeah.
Like, everybody keeps saying, oh, he'll come around, he'll hit. Prove it to me. I have not seen it.
Yeah.
See, I'm gonna say that the offense is average to below average right now. I mean, like right now they're sitting in a 1-0 game.
I mean, the Phillies' offense is way better than them. I'm sorry, it is.
Well, it is, but I mean, they're sitting in a 1-0 game. That's exactly.
Yeah, I was gonna say not.
But they should do some damage against they should have done damage yesterday against the Phillies bullpen and against Ranger Suarez. And they should do some damage today against the Phillies bullpen. I highly recommend them actually starting to hit against the Phillies bullpen. But, you know, like
really
the early games of the Nationals series, like they were punishing bad pitchers. They were, you know, so
but also they wouldn't have scored yesterday if it weren't for Bum's defense.
Yep.
He makes those plays. They don't score.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm not yet super concerned about the offense.
It's way too early to be concerned about anything. Like I really start to actually take things seriously once they're like 30 games in.
I am concerned about the bullpen, but I was that predates the
I
was already concerned.
Like a perpetual concern for me.
Like right now
it's
I would say
not been a concern
right now I would say the offense is performing at about expectations, maybe slightly below. The bullpen is performing below expectations and the rotation is performing above expectations given the DeGrom injury.
Yes.
So, you know, and that's right now they're 3-2. So that's like, you know, slightly above expectations, like, you know, slightly above average.
It really should be 5-0.
Right. And I mean, the rotation situation is like one tweak away from being dire.
Yes.
Now.
Yes,
that's
that
the
is
real
true.
Issue. It's like they've performed well, but we're already at the edge of our depth and it's day 5 of the season. Like that's the problem.
Like, I mean, part of that is just because of the shortened spring, I think. And I mean, the workloads clearly are being managed early on. I mean, I think Wheeler had an injury issue though in his spring training. So he didn't have like as much time to ramp up. But I mean, he's not the only one that's being kept on a low pitch count. I think McGill had how many pitches? 76 pitches. So he's also still kind of limited. And I mean, he's not the only one. And I imagine I haven't really paid any attention to games outside of the NL East at this point, just due to time. But I imagine like other pitchers are being played conservatively at this point.
Well, it's like
this is going to start happening across the league too.
Yeah.
After last year, I'm just tired. Like last year it was, 2020 screwed everybody up. Oh, it's cold. Oh, the offense will get going when it warms up. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's the injuries. Oh, we'll just give us time. And they never got going.
Like, well, I think for me, that's just using the excuses for the Mets. But like this particular one, I think is a league-wide issue because the shortened spring affected everybody.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get that. But at the same time, like,
you can't use excuses. I get that.
Yeah.
But it's also, like, it's,
I have
also
no hope.
It's too early to give up hope. Stop that. It's too early to give up hope.
Like, I don't know. I think it's because there's no Jake there to give me my hope. Because at least, you know, when they were playing bad, you knew you still had Jake. And there's no Jake. And I'm not happy about that.
Yeah. It's
not I don't great. Think anybody is. But I do like what I have seen from Tyler McGill thus far.
I mean, he's pitched just about as great as well as you could expect. Like the games. Yes. I mean, they won the first game he pitched, and they are currently barely holding on to this one run lead they have now. And if they lose this game tonight, that won't have been Tyler McGill's fault. Like, and
nope.
There's nothing really to say that these things wouldn't have happened if Jake had started these games instead. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like there's really he's not much of a result that would have been different.
But it's getting the joy drum. In seeing Jake, though.
Like, yes. I mean, who doesn't?
He is more fun to watch pitch, sure.
Yes.
I mean, Tyler McGill's been pretty fun to watch pitch. He's, like, ramped up his velocity a shit
I know. That's the surprising thing
but
right now.
Is that a smart idea? Like, Jake did that it's last not. Year. And
yeah, it's kind of concerning. Well. It's like, oh, you see this dude who, like, ramped up his velocity and became elite? I want to do that. But then he got hurt. So is that really the best model for you to be following? I mean, to be fair, and I'm not trying to, like, call out Jake here by any stretch of the imagination, but Tyler McGill is, like, 6'7 and 250 pounds. Like, he's a little bit more of a, you know...
A specimen,
I guess, physically. As far as, like, you know, the physical body, like strength.
Ooh la la.
Like, Jake. You Jake's know, more wiry.
He is. And obviously,
Jake's
like
a tall drink of water.
Yes, yeah. He is. And obviously, he can be elite and, like, he's a freak of nature and, like, it is what it is. But if I was, like, you know, I'm less concerned about Tyler McGill's body breaking down trying to throw like 98 than I am about Jake, I guess. But it still is like, maybe you should dial it back. But he,
well,
like,
Jake,
you know,
was also throwing 100, 101 and stuff. Yeah. And that's just
Tyler
that's
said
just...
he wants to throw 100.
No, dear Tyler, if you are listening to this podcast, which I'm banking you're not, but just in case you are, don't do it. You have good stuff with the speed you're at right now.
Today he threw a 92 mile an hour changeup. I saw it with my eyes and I was like, whoa. Anyway, so
he's,
yeah,
got stuff in his arsenal. I just think he's been gleaning so much information from the pitchers. I think he gleaned a lot from DeGrom last year. I think he's gleaning a lot probably from Scherzer. I don't know. He's
yeah,
got,
they
he's
said
got some
the,
good role models to emulate.
They said during the broadcast today that he's like, you know, in his quest to, like, ramp up his velocity a little more, he's learned to, like, use his legs more in his delivery, which is something that Jake does and other elite pitchers do. And so, like, I think that that's, like, been a big thing for him, a big change.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I do think Hefner is a good pitching coach.
He's an excellent
coach. Seems like he knows
coach,
what he's doing.
Yeah.
So,
and that was another thing too. Like, he was one of the first out of the dugout with Buck after Lindor got
it. After ready to throw hands.
Yeah.
My God.
Way to go, Hef.
Yeah.
I like Hef. I mean, I liked him when he was playing for the Mets too. It's a shame that his arm blew out.
Yeah.
Ugh. That sucked.
I mean,
he was, sorry.
Go ahead.
I mean, if he had stayed healthy, he would have been a very solid above average, possibly elite starter. Because I think, what was it, 2013 or 14? He was having a really elite season. I want to say it was 2013 because it was like Harvey was the star that year. But like Hefner was really, like, up there as well. I can't remember if it was 2013 or 2014, but like he had a really good year. That's all I remember.
Yeah. I could look it up.
It would have been 2012. For some reason, 2012 is sticking out to me.
I'm just going to say I was not watching regularly in 2012, and I just really remember.
Nor was I. That was during my like not dark period makes it sound. Yes. Bleak. That's not what I mean. That was during my like my college years. I didn't watch too many yes. games because I was out of the viewing area college-ing. Of SNY and didn't have MLB TV and was also colleging. which was like 2009 to 2013. What was the year he was really
Jeremy
good?
Heffer. Let's see.
What was the year he was really good? I'm trying to find it.
Because he wasn't
2010.
Oh, maybe not.
2010.
Oh
no.
Oh.
What? No. I'm wrong.
No, because really he was only here in 2012 and 2013. Huh. I'm clearly misremembering things. Wow. Interesting. Huh.
Yeah, because I think, yeah, in 2014 is when he needed his second Tommy John.
Yeah.
Yes. He wasn't there with Jake in 2014.
No, he only threw 14 innings that year between, like, and not, like, you know, major league, not all of them major league innings. Yeah. So it was just really 2012 and 2013.
Huh.
Yeah, like I said, for some reason, 12 stuck out to me.
That's weird, though. Like, he was not as good as I remember. Oh, my gosh. My memory.
Drew Smith, back-to-back strikeouts.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Hoskins and Didi. Sit down, you jerks.
Going back to the bullpen just for, like, 1 minute. We were talking about this in Amazing Avenue Slack today, and I think it's like worth bringing up on the show just because, like, you know, I think it's just like worth noting given the fact that the bullpen has kind of fallen apart a little bit already. And it was something that we identified as an issue going in. And I think we can talk all day about like who they should have signed. And obviously there are other guys. I think they should have signed at least one more guy rather than like trading for Joely Rodriguez at the last minute. but like, this isn't a problem if you develop relievers, which the Mets have failed to do. And the Mets seem to philosophically as an organization be opposed to giving relievers big contracts, which is fine, I suppose, if you like view relievers as like a volatile asset or whatever, but then you have to be able to develop them. And the Mets have not consistently done that. So instead you just have like this bullpen that you have to sort of like rebuild every year out of like kind of like middling guys. And it just doesn't work that well when you constantly just have to like build a bullpen out of free agents and you won't like go for, you know, and obviously like this is not a guy I want them to sign, but when you won't go for like the Haters and the Chapmans of the world, not those guys specifically, but you know what I mean, like the elite Liam Hendricks, the like elite closers. I mean, we have Edwin Diaz obviously because we traded for him, but like when you won't sign those like big reliever contracts, instead you just like end up with like, you know, 2 years of Trevor May and like here and there. Like, I'm not disparaging Trevor May, he's a good pitcher, but like, you know, that's what you end up doing, and they won't spend big money on the bullpen. And that's what they did.
He couldn't even keep Loop, for God's sake.
Exactly.
That's
sign Loop. Ugh. They wouldn't.
That was a bad thing.
They wouldn't bring back Loop because they didn't want to spend the money. It's like, you know, they just don't see that as a worthy investment. Because obviously it's not that the Mets are, now that they are owned by Steve Cohen, Wilpon Mets were a different story. But now that they're owned by Steve Cohen, they're obviously not philosophically opposed to spending money on free agents anymore. But I think that Sandy Alderson philosophically still sees the bullpen as like not the best like investment, which is fine. But again, then you have to develop relievers. And the Mets have not really done that. The only we were talking about this again in Amazing Avenue Slack in the past like decade. Think about the relievers that the Mets have developed that have been good. It's basically been Jairus Familia in like the peak of his powers. He was very good reliever. Okay, they developed him. Fine. Seth Lugo, like, you know, who's like not as elite as Jairus Familia was in his peak, but you know, he was pretty good and still might be okay. Seth Lugo and maybe Drew Smith, who they traded for. That's not enough. Other teams develop close. Like two of those dudes like every year. Like the Dodgers.
Does Henry Mejia count?
I guess Henry Mejia counts, maybe. I don't know.
I mean,
he had the chance to be good.
He did.
He was good for a bit.
He was.
We don't know if that was a.
You know, and so like when the Mets, after their sort of like 2015, 2016, like run of success, such as it is, they like traded a bunch of guys, Duda, Granderson, etc. They traded those guys and they brought back a village of relievers. That was their goal. They were trying to trade for these like high upside relievers. And that was like, they were trying to develop a bullpen internally by trading for these guys and stocking their system full of these like high upside relievers. They successfully developed one of them, Drew Smith. That's it. And Drew Smith isn't even, I mean, like, he might be good, but he hasn't been healthy enough to really see for sure if he's going to be like consistently a guy. And so he's like a maybe still, and he's the only one that has had any success of that whole crop of relievers. Think about it. Jamie Callahan, Steven Nogosic, like all those guys that they traded.
Jacob Rame.
None of those guys were successful at the major league level. And so like, they're just incapable of developing like that solid core of like two or three homegrown guys that can anchor the bullpen. And then you can sign like one or two free agents to supplement that. But instead, the Mets mostly have to just like build a bullpen out of free agents every year and don't want to spend big money to do that. So it's like you kind of have to do one or the other, either spend big money on the bullpen because you can't develop relievers or develop relievers. And the Mets just did neither of those. So instead, they usually have like kind of a middling bullpen, and that's kind of coming through again now.
So can they develop relievers, or can they not like scout for relievers?
I think both.
Or is it both?
Probably it's both, but like this whole thing just is another reason why Sandy kind of needs to retire.
Because think about it. Someone, I mean, they got out scouted on Paul Sewald. They got out scouted on Chris Flexen. I mean, Chris Flexen's not a reliever, he's a starter, but you know, like they got, you know, like they, like Paul Sewald became good after he left the Mets because somebody saw something in him that the Mets didn't. They fixed him.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just that is frustrating. But, you know,
hopefully going forward, Epler will hopefully later this season, but like really like from the ground up next season, kind of start to put more emphasis on the bullpen.
I hope so.
It's important.
It is
just
important.
A little bit. We have a bad bullpen mixed with a bad manager. I'm not a bad manager, but a bad bullpen manager. It's like a toxic mix.
Yeah.
And it's been the norm.
Yeah.
For the Mets. It's been the norm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, early days, Mets still have a winning record for now. they're still winning this game in the top of the year.
And they have a base runner. Nimmo is on base runner. After a walk.
We'll see. You know, but it was just it's less that they're 3-2 and like drawing any conclusions from that, and more just like the two losses that they had should not have been losses and were excruciating.
Yeah.
Like I would have rather, I mean, I don't know if I would rather this, but like, you know, it would have been less like concerning if they just like lost one of those games, like 10-0 or something. And it was like, whatever, throw away. Well, like these things happen, which I'm sure they will lose games like that because every team does, even the best teams, even the Dodgers lose games by double digits. Sometimes it happens, but you know, these two losses were ones that they let get away that should have been wins. And so they should have conceivably been 5-0 right now. And that's what's annoying about it. Not that they're 3-2, that they should be 5-0.
However, this happened early in the season, again, maybe they'll learn from this pretty quickly.
Hopefully.
That's the flip side of it happening early, is hopefully they'll learn from it.
Hopefully. But anyway, going around the majors, in the early going, there are some other news stories around. I figured I'd start with things that I find awesome before we go into things that I find not awesome. So things that I find awesome, the mic'd up umpires rules. I love it.
That's so long overdue.
It's been
the norm. I don't even watch football, and I know it's been the norm in football for quite some time.
Yeah, and it's funny because I barely watch football. Like the only football I watch is like, it's in the back, like Michael's watching it. And I happen to be in the same room while the Jets are playing, but it's just funny because like, even with the like minimal amount of football I consume, the first time I heard like a replay review, I still expected them to be like automatic first down.
You have to Google in hockey. There's a referee called Wes McCauley. And when it's, and they also announce this, the plays. So he'll ham it up. Like he'll be like, the after review, the conclusion is, and then he'll wait. So the crowd will be like, and he'll be like, we got a goal.
I need an umpire to do this.
Are so crazy. Like I want an umpire to do that so bad. Like after further review, we've concluded that it's a home run. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the closest we got to something dramatic like that so far in the baseball season was the umpire wasn't exactly hamming it up, but like that Blue Jays game, like that was, that's really the, at least that I've seen. Cause I haven't, it's not like I've like watched the highlights of every game, but that like made it to Twitter. Like there was like, that's like been the most game deciding like replay review so far, but it was really dramatic. Like it created a moment with the fans because they were like, they were like, the crowds, like the crowd went absolutely nuts after they did the like review call. So it was like very fun.
Like that's because the review can be torturous. So if the umpires have some fun with it and create that moment with the fans, like it creates just another level. Because like again, like on a play that could end the game, it's like, well, this is dumb. You have to wait for like the call from an umpire to like decide the game. Like that's not exciting. You just want, you know, the game to be decided. But then if like you have an umpire out there hamming it up and, you know, creating more drama, it's, you know, it can be entertaining.
One of my favorite like non-baseball like sports videos of all time is that football referee. I think it was in a college game or maybe even it was high school, but he was just like, personal foul. He was giving him the business, that one.
in play runs. Lindor singled and got Nimmo in.
Yay!
Stuff we love to see, folks.
Eighth inning, good things.
It's just for them to blow it in the bottom of the
Stop that. No.
No bad vibes.
No bad vibes, Linda. No bad vibes. Don't put that out in the universe, please.
So
I called it yesterday. I hate to say it. I called it.
I know.
Well, you're going to be wrong today. How's that?
Okay, fine.
Other awesome things, at least in my opinion. I think that the early City Connect jerseys of this season have been great so far. The Nationals ones with the cherry blossoms on them, chefs.
I hate how pretty those are.
They're so good.
This is what's, I'm going to be the contrarian on this one. I loved the cherry blossom part of it and I hated the rest of it. I don't like the font. I don't like the color.
Oh, that it's gray. I love that it's gray.
I thought it could have been a little more contrasting to make the pink pop a little more.
That's why I liked the dark gray, but I guess the white also being there doesn't help that. But I also realized
they have like the shadow of the cherry blossoms all over the uniform too.
I didn't see that.
A solid gray. I was like, oh, there's little cherry blossoms on it too.
Yeah, and it's subtle, which I like.
To me, it was so subtle, I didn't even notice that. So I don't know.
I loved them. Like, honestly, if it wasn't literally the Washington Nationals, NL East rival, I would have bought one of those jerseys.
Oh, the hat was
like,
so
I really
pretty.
Wish the Washington Nationals were not in the NL East. Cause obviously, although I mean, I do like it because it means I get to see the Mets a lot, but like, you know, I don't get to root for the team in the city that I live in at all because I have to root against them, which I'm happy to do. Don't get me wrong. I will happily root against the Nationals at all times. But like, you know, if it wasn't the case and the team that in the city that I lived in was not in the Mets division, like I would have bought one of those jerseys because it was just very DC to me and it made me happy. And I like the cherry blossoms. So I thought it was a great uniform. That's been my favorite City Connect by far. And then the Astros just unveiled theirs, and I think theirs is excellent also, the like space city ones.
It's good. I mean, I like the space city font, but I mean, yeah, and I'm like, not, I just, these are very, I don't know, gimmicky to me.
So that's what the black jersey is to me. So
no!
Yes, I agree. I think I think that the like City Connect idea is very fun and I really love it, and it like brings like, you know, some freshness to the game and I really enjoy it. I just feel like the designs have not been well executed until now. The Marlins one is the only one I really liked from last year.
That one was fine.
The rest of them I was kind of like, I mean, now, some of them I was just like neutral on, like I was like, this is fine, whatever. But some of them were
big
like
big question. Are the Yankees ever gonna do it? Because
I thought about that.
They don't wear the pinstripes. Yeah,
I thought about that recently because someone said, because someone was tweeting about like, someone tweeted like a picture of like all the City Connect jerseys so far and was like, which one's your favorite? So
the Red Sox one was horrific.
I didn't really like that one. But like people were talking about which ones were their favorite, and then like obviously like a lot of people were saying that the Dodgers were their least favorite one because the Dodgers didn't really do anything to the uniform. They did the blue pants.
No, they didn't.
But otherwise, it was just the blue.
But otherwise, it's like
And it just said Los Dodgers on it instead of Dodgers, which is, you know, fine. But like they didn't really do any creativity to it, so it got me think. That got me thinking because I was like, oh, the Dodgers didn't really change their uniforms at all, and I have a feeling that's what the Yankees would do if they had City Connect. Like, oh, we made the pinstripes 2% thicker. Change. Like, that's what I'm imagining. Like, the Yankee City Connect.
Or, like, 4% thicker, which just symbolizes the four train.
Yeah, like you're going to have to use a magnifying glass. Like, we added a small logo, and you have to use, like, a magnifying glass to see it. Like I can't even imagine what the Yankees are going to do. I feel like they're not going to do anything them at all.
No.
I feel if anything, they'll do like kind of what their spring training uniforms are like, which is just like the navy as the main color with like the white NY. Like they might do that, but I don't know if they even will do that. So
we'll see.
We shall see. So now we move on to baseball stories that I find not awesome, which is it's time for our periodic owners being cheap douches segment. because I feel like a lot of that has sort of cropped up in the past couple of days, like a lot of that discourse. So first of all, like there's been several, I mean, this isn't like inherently bad. I just feel like it's sort of indicative of the fact that the CBA has like not gotten rid of this. There have been several smaller market teams who have locked up their young players to like very cheap extensions. So we've got Miles Straw with Cleveland, JP Crawford with the Mariners, Key Brian Hayes with the Pirates, and it's like these are being praised by people, and it's kind of just like. And the Key Brian Hayes one, especially, I remember them saying like, oh, this is the biggest contract the Pirates have like ever given out. And I was like, are you serious? Like, that's, I don't know, like if that should be seen as a good thing to me, like good for each of these players individually. But like, it's still kind of a symptom of like, oh, we're going to lock these players up cheap while they're super young and like have them for way under market value during their like prime years, which is, you know, the smart like Moneyball thing to do, but again, not necessarily indicative of like a healthy labor market, I would say. But meanwhile, you know, in the extension news, Aaron Judge, speaking of the Yankees, turned down a big extension from the Yankees, and all of the details of what was offered were leaked. And actually just today we found out that like ownership basically threatened him and told him like, if you don't accept this extension, we will leak the terms to the media and tell them that you turned this big amount of money down. Like they're using it as a tactic to turn the fan base against the player. That's what they're doing. And I mean, they were successful, I think, pretty much, because you should have seen Yankee fans on Twitter after like the agreement wasn't reached between Judge and the Yankees. Like so many people being like, he should have taken that. He doesn't care about the Yankees. Screw Judge. I'm out on him and blah, blah, blah. Like
how long was the contract? I remember how much it was. How long was it?
7 years.
I think there was the rumor he wanted 9 years. So I think it would have to have been less than that.
And I mean, like, it's, you know, like the Yankees didn't like super duper lowball him, but he is theoretically worth more than that if he continues to produce at his current level. Yeah. It's just that he's taking a bet on himself that he will. And he's been fairly injury prone in his career. But you know,
and now can't travel to Toronto.
There's that. But you know, like, this is his decision to make. Like, you know, I hate to say it, it's his decision to make. And if he, you know, you can think all you want that it was not a good choice, that it was too much of a risk, but he's betting on himself and that's his choice. And now the fans hate him because of this.
How dare you betray the Yankees?
I mean, I think
like it's a privilege to play for the Yankees.
The other optics of this is that it's over $200 million right now. And just in a time when we're seeing a lot of people economically struggling, to see someone turn that much money down is just a little, I don't know.
I get it, but also the Yankees are way richer than $200 million.
Yes, like, they are.
Then that money is just going right back into the owner's pockets. Yep.
I'm just seeing it from that side. I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just seeing it from that side.
And listen, I mean, like, and I'm not just trying to be like a Mets fan shitting on the Yankees, although it is fun to have the shoe on the other foot for a change. But like the Yankees had by pretty much all accounts a very unsuccessful offseason. Like, they did not land any of the major shortstop free agents that they wanted. You know, the Yankees were in a position to make a big splash at shortstop, and there were lots of shortstops available, Carlos Correa, Trevor Story, lots of big names available in free agency, and the Yankees got none of them. They also made a play for Freeman and didn't get him. Although there was a quote, like, it was funny because it was like, we never actually made an offer to Correa or Freeman. We just checked in on them. And it's like, that's not the comeback you think it is.
Okay.
And I said something like, this is a tier below we tried. This is like, we thought about trying. like the Mets always do the we tried. Like, oh, we were talking and we made an offer and, you know, we just got outbid by someone else. The Yankees didn't even get that far. They just got a, like, we thought, considered very strongly trying and decided not to. So it's just like the Yankees, like, bad optics, like, on the Yankees part. So, you know, and you know, that, like, we're mostly spending most of this segment crapping on the, like, tanking teams. Obviously the Yankees don't belong in that category. They're not tanking, but they're not being the Yankees. The Mets are being the Yankees, which is kind of cool. But
the Mets are now being the new Mets.
Yes.
Please, let's not compare ourselves to the Yankees, those jerks.
Yeah, true. The Mets are being
the new Mets.
The New York Police.
Steve Cohen Mets.
The new and improved Steve Cohen New York Metropolitans.
The big bad dynasty Mets, so bad that they had to introduce a new tax, a new tier of the tax just for Steve Cohen.
Yep.
But, you know, back to the tanking teams side of the equation. Something that came out the other day is that the Orioles invested $1.2 billion of taxpayer money into the revitalization of Camden Yards. Now, there was a lot of backlash about this on Twitter because, you know, again, optics of it are bad, right? Like, you're not spending any money on your baseball club, but you're taking $1.2 billion of public funds and using it to, like, beautify your stadium, which is already a nice stadium. Like, it's not like it needs refurbishing. But the Inner Harbor neighborhood, I only know this because I lived in Baltimore for a long time, but the Inner Harbor neighborhood, desperately, where Camden Yards is situated, desperately needs the economic stimulus due to the pandemic. But, you know, the optics of it, again, for a tanking team to use a ton of taxpayer money on the stadium and, you know, not spend money on the making the players, you know, making your team roster better is not good. It's bad optics. It really is. And this is coming after the heels of the Orioles, like, basically right before the season, trading two of their best relievers for scraps. And then Mike Elias, the GM, giving a really terrible quote about like the starting pitchers that they have on their team, like the ones that are like, you know, the homegrown guys like Bruce Zimmerman and Zach Lowther and those type of guys, about how those guys need to, quote, step up, as if like he himself is not responsible for their development and for this roster. Like, come on, man. That was just like, that made me so mad when I saw it.
It's just, well, you have like, Matt Harvey now.
Step ups. I'm glad Harvey, even if it's a minor league deal, I don't know what's going to go on with the suspension there. And oh, before I continue with that comment, we have had in the eighth inning, a 1-2-3 bottom of the eighth, Drew yes. Smith, my friends.
I told you, Linda.
Who pitched?
Drew Smith,
still.
I think he pitched the seventh.
He pitched both.
Oh, yes.
Ho, ho, ho.
He got through the dreaded eighth. I mean, obviously, disaster can still strike in the ninth, but presumably we have
Narco. But we've broken that pattern of the past two games, so.
Alexa, but anyway, please play Narco.
Please play Narco. Right?
Get the trumpets out. My God.
Please get the trumpets out.
But going back to Matt Harvey for a second, I'm glad he signed to a minor league deal, but I don't, what's going on with his suspension? That's only going to kick in if he's promoted, right?
Yeah, I guess. And I don't know.
I don't even think they ever officially said he was suspended.
They never did. And so I don't know what's happening with that.
I don't think anybody does.
Yeah.
Because I know they said it was a potential of 60 games.
Yeah, they did.
It is possible MLB suspension looms.
Yeah, like they haven't handed it down yet. And I think they are only handed down if he's on the major league roster. So I don't know.
He's able to appeal it anyway. So
yes,
we'll see.
And we shall Lord see. Knows the Orioles, he might make the Orioles at some point.
Yeah.
If he can show that he like still has it, I guess after that, like, you know, after not having the spring training, so he needs some time to ramp up anyway.
It's so weird to see Jerry's Familia's name as a Philly. I was like, oh my God, they're putting Familia in. And I realized he's on the Phillies now.
It's very weird to see him in a Phillies uniform for sure.
Yeah.
It's bizarre to me.
It's still weird to see Zach Wheeler in a Phillies uniform.
Yeah. I'm not used to that yet either.
Yeah.
But.
And I think he's on year four of that contract. Three or four.
There's
three.
I think, I don't know.
So the last thing I'll say about tanking, and then I'll shut up about tanking, but it makes me mad, is that there was his son of the Reds, gave like a really terrible quote, in a radio interview. I think it was today, or at least the audio of the interview was tweeted today. I think it was this morning. He basically he was asked like, how would you respond to fans who are, you know, unhappy with the lack of success that the team has had, you know, recently. And he basically like, he was really condescending and mocking about it. And he was almost like, well, what are you going to do? Stop being a Reds fan? Like, meh. And I was like, what the hell? This dude's such a craven asshole. Like, all these people were the worst. Like, basically, he said, like, he doesn't care what fans think because they have no choice but to root for the Reds. And if they don't root for the Reds and they start leaving, then the team will just move somewhere else. And I was like, oh, cool.
Charming. Okay.
These are such entitled assholes. And it's so depressing.
I mean, that makes me, in a way, like we know my issues. Everybody knows my issues with Steve Cohen, but I'm still very happy that he is actually a baseball fan and that he's actually a Mets fan.
Right.
So he cares. He does care about this team beyond it being a business. I think that's my perception. I could be wrong.
But I think that's true.
I mean, obviously it is a business for him, but he also is a fan.
Yes. Yes.
And he always cares. Unlike the Will Pines, who cared more about the Dodgers than the Mets.
Yeah.
So it's a refreshing change in that way too.
Yeah.
And he'll get into it with fans. He'll get into it with fans on Twitter, which is kind of like he's a part of Mets Twitter in a way, in that way.
That's yeah.
Funny. So
it's kind of, I just felt like that quote was just like, so like
ugly,
it's ugly, just an ugly and quote. Revelatory in their attitude. Like they do not care. Like most ownership groups do not
don't give a crap
about the fans. No. And they basically are like daring us. Like we're going to suck on purpose. What are you going to do about it? There's nothing you can do about it. You'll keep rooting for us, won't you? You have no choice. Like, what are you going to do? There's not going to be a team here if you don't come to the stadium. We'll just move the team somewhere else. And it's just like, you know, most of the time, like, that's the quiet part, but he just said the quiet part out loud. You know.
Yeah, just another ugly side of the game that nobody's doing anything about because Manfred doesn't care.
Right.
Manfred actively makes this sport worse.
Oh, no, but he gave everybody headphones, Kellyanne.
Oh, please.
So sweet.
Bose headphones. He gave everyone Bose headphones.
That was so thoughtful.
I was going to say, I love Bose headphones. I'm wearing some right now, but good God.
But like, I tweeted this on Twitter. Like, to me, that's kind of like a dig. Like you guys need to like listen more.
Oh, and I mean, it's another like
it was kind of passive aggressive.
And I mean, it is like a, what are you going to do about it? Like, it's the same attitude. Like, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
But you know, so I just wanted to highlight those things because I think they're just like indicative of the fact that just because we have a new CBA doesn't mean that teams aren't tanking anymore. They still are. And they still don't care. Still needs to be.
And they're being open about not caring.
Being
as long as they make their money. See, that's the other thing. Like all these streaming services are making it so much harder for the fans to watch a damn game.
Yep.
And they're saying it's about making the game more accessible though.
Yeah. So they're just, the MLB is getting these lucrative deals, making it harder for fans. And that's just another example that they don't care. The fans are like the least on the priority list. Like we're way down below.
Max Scherzer's literal Mets debut was on Apple TV.
Yep. I didn't watch.
Which, you know, I have mixed feelings because I agree with Linda about the streaming services. I mean, it's more that they're like, it's more about the exclusivity of it, right? Like the idea of putting games on streaming services is a good idea for making it more accessible to more people, but they're making it exclusive to the streaming service. Yes. So people like me who pay for MLB TV, it's like, what am I paying for this service for if I need other streaming services to watch some of the games? I'm already blacked out of Nationals games. So now I need all these other streaming services, Apple TV, Peacock, like that's a slap in the face to people who pay for your streaming service.
Yeah, yes. Like do both. And why can't they do both?
Do both. And the other thing with that is that they haven't had a consistent stream. Like they did Facebook a couple years ago, they did YouTube, and then it was Peacock, and then it's Apple TV. And it's like, pick one and stick with it for a little bit too. And I mean, YouTube is probably the most accessible of the four that I just mentioned because you don't need a login. You need a login with Peacock. You need a login with Apple TV, which frustrated a lot. I know it frustrated a lot of commenters on Amazing Avenue who avoid Apple because people do avoid Apple intentionally.
Me, they right have, here. Oh, I refuse.
Darn it. And I was going to say, Linda needs to get iMessage. We need to get her an Apple device.
Refuse.
So, but you had to have an Apple ID to sign in and watch that game.
Yep.
That's
I refuse. Dumb. I don't care who's pitching. I don't care if it was Max Scherzer. I got my principles, damn
they're
it.
They're going to try and make you get a subscription. Yep. And it's just bad all around.
Yeah, it's not good. And like, but, you know, I said I had mixed feelings. The positive part about it is that, and here's what's annoying, is that like they're putting these games on these streaming services that no one, like way less people are watching. But then like, the broadcast booth had two women in it, which is like,
well,
really
I hear
cool.
They were really, really bad.
I mean, like,
they
I
were
don't
not.
Think, I heard great. Mixed things. I heard like good things but mostly bad things. I don't know. I didn't watch it because I was at the game, thankfully. So I didn't have to miss it because I was there.
Part of it was just like they were not watching or commentating on the game at points. They were kind of doing their own little banter that wasn't even related to baseball.
Somebody said it was basically a podcast during a baseball game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, to be fair, if Chris Young did a baseball game, I was shocked
how like not great he was.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I get it's their first time, but like. But also what pisses me off too is like, I hit the wrong thing. Like the Rangers, the ESPN is doing hockey games this year. So what they were trying is they put it on Hulu. So what I do is when this time of year, when the Rangers and Mets are playing, I flip. But since the Rangers were on Hulu one game, the game that they could freaking clinch the playoffs, and it was Mets opening day, I had a pick because I can't flip when I log into an app. So I'm like, I got to watch Mets opening day because I was live tweeting the game. So I can't. So I missed the freaking game. I missed the Ranger game because you have to log in on your smart TV and then you're inside the app and then I can't flip to the Met game. So it's like, you're stuck once you make the decision to watch the damn game.
The answer, Linda, is to obviously have a wall of TVs.
I know. I don't want to watch the Rangers on my cell phone and have the Mets on the TV. Or like on my computer. I'm like, why is it so complicated?
You need a woman cave in your house where you have a wall of TVs. The wall of TVs, and one is for the Rangers, and one is for the Mets. And
what are we going to do when the Rangers are in the playoffs? I can't be doing this.
Oh my gosh. I don't know. You'll have to bark up someone else's tree on that. I can only care about one sport at a time.
I'm gonna say
I don't have the emotional bandwidth to pour myself into anything except the stupid Mets. We will end the show like we always do with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Kellyanne Healy, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Oh, good God. I don't even know. This is actually nothing to do with me. It's just observing things at my library. And since we have people back in the library and we're having the early childhood programs again, I have now seen in the past like month, three different friendships form between the children and between their parents. And I love seeing friendships form because of programs and activities at the library. That's my walk-off win.
That's great.
Go library friendships.
It's a great feeling.
Yes. And just kind of like watching them like playing together and talking to each other. It's great. It's great.
Yeah, like the kids who wouldn't have met otherwise. It's so sweet.
Yes. Oh, and happy birthday to a certain podcast dad's child.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yes.
Happy, happy birthday. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Yes. Podcast dad's daughter. It's her birthday today. So happy birthday. Linda Cervich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Like I just said, the damn Rangers are in the playoffs.
Yeah!
I can't do this again. Like, it's been a couple years since they've been in the playoffs. I think, when was the last time? 2017, I think, was the last time they were in the playoffs, I think. Because then they were in the bubble, but it didn't really count because it was a play-in, so it was kind of the playoffs, but not technically the playoffs in 2020, but whatever. I still call it the playoffs, but I really miss that. Like, I really don't know how I'm going to survive. I don't know because I just remember that feeling of like being close to vomiting all day, knowing that they're playing that night, not being able to focus at work because you know they're playing that night. And because it's the Rangers, they never make it easy. So they always like, it's always a 2-1 game and you want to die by the time the game ends. But it really is fun.
Well, it sounds like it's a Mets game. It's not a game if it doesn't take 10 years off your life or destroy your liver.
I really don't know how I survived their playoff runs. I really don't, because every game was 2-1. And like, it was always a mad scramble in the third period with like 2 minutes left. And like, they would just completely fall apart and Lundqvist would have to save them. But Yeah, so yay. And then what I do like too is like Lenox Hill Hospital would like put all the new babies in like Welcome to Rangerstown onesies, and like the lights outside Madison Square Garden would like flash when they scored, and like the Empire State Building would be in like red and blue, and like the lights would flash into their goal songs. So, like I just missed like the whole city just like rallying around them, and like that feeling of like, oh yeah, like wait, the city can root for one team. Like this is kind of fun, because the Islanders are not in the city. So take that, Islanders. And it's like I just love that, like them, like the city letting them know like, hey, the Rangers are playing tonight, and it's, you know, and like everybody knows when they score a goal because then the lights start flashing, and I just like miss that so much. And yeah, they got a lot of kids, so it'll be interesting how the kids react to being in the playoffs for the first time. Some of the kids can't even drink yet and they're in the playoffs. And it's weird to me because when they clinch, it's just like, oh yay, we won, cool, we're in the playoffs. And but there's like no champagne, like when baseball, they're like,
they destroy a clubhouse.
Yeah, they destroy the clubhouse, champagne everywhere, and
that is the proper way, in my opinion.
Like stick taps all around, yay. And then they're like, well, we got a game tomorrow, whatever. So it's like, it's so weird, like the difference between the two sports. Like I think baseball is like the only one that like truly like is
goes bananas.
Like, yeah, goes bananas with the champagne. And but still, like, yeah, so in the next coming weeks, like I'm gonna be like drinking a lot.
Yeah.
And just like
pace yourself. Don't die.
Yeah. Like I have to grab my third purr from home, because my routine when they were in the playoffs, when I still lived at home, was like this giant stuffs or purr. And like if it's just for the World Series and the playoffs too, for the Mets too, like I would just sit under my bed, like hugging this giant surper, rocking back and forth, like I'm
able to breathe. Oh my gosh.
I mean, I was like a mess in the 2015 playoffs, so I
don't know. Yeah. So that poor surper has seen a lot.
Yeah.
So like it's tradition now. I need to like bring my server over and hopefully like not die. And yeah, so yeah, you know, if you hear like a loud screech in a couple weeks, it's probably me. So just ignore, especially if we're podcasting and they're on. Like I'm just warning you now.
Well,
there might be screeching.
God, speaking of screeching. Not good screeching at the moment. We are in the bottom of the ninth inning. Kyle Schwarber has struck out, but JT Realmuto has gotten a single. So we have one out, the tying run at the plate, and that tying run is Bryce Harper.
I'm not excited. Pray. I'm gonna talk about my walk-off win instead. I'm not gonna,
yeah, yes, please,
let's talk
do that
about your walk-off win.
And if I happen to scream and cry in the middle of it, I'm sorry.
As I alluded to earlier, my walk-off win is that I went to Max Scherzer's debut at Nationals Park, and woo! It was great. I was so happy because, I mean, for a while it looked like it wasn't even going to happen because Jake got hurt, so we weren't sure if like Scherzer was going to get moved to opening day and then I had tickets to the wrong game, or Scherzer had that hamstring thing, so we weren't sure if he was going to pitch his first game at all. But then everything lined up and he pitched, and he pitched pretty well, and the Mets won the game even though there was a rain delay, and I got to scream at the Nationals for hitting our guys. And it was really a great day at the ballpark. And I was just very happy that I got to see Scherzer's first game as a Met.
Did anybody say anything about your jersey?
No one said, oh, on the Metro there, someone said to a Nationals fan said to me, I like the guy on your jersey, but I can't root for him today, which was I was like, I respect that.
That's
I
respect fair. That.
Yeah.
I did get compliments from Mets fans and Nationals fans alike on my t-shirt under my jersey, which was my Manfred Sucks t-shirt, which is something that all baseball fans can agree on.
I was going to say, I think that's a universal feeling in baseball.
Yep.
Yeah.
I agree.
Amongst baseball fans.
That's like the one uniting thing, I think. That's like
and that's why I wore it to that game, because I was like, well, I'm in enemy territory, but I can be like, you know, I can reach an olive branch across and say, hey, look, Manfred sucks. We can agree on that, right? So yeah, that was my walk-off win. It was a great day at the ballpark. Mets W. Love it.
That's good. That's so good.
So was it just all Met fans at the end?
Because that's basically.
Oh yeah, because there were people screaming "Let's go Mets!" and everybody was like hearing it, and I was like wondering, maybe that's Michael and Allison.
Yeah,
we Bryce Harper them. Struck out swinging. Okay, one out left. We can do this. Yes! We can do this. On a swinging strike.
Oh, blue
on a 91-mile-an-hour slider too. Oof.
Cool. We stayed till the end. And by the end, it was basically all Mets fans. And like, it was like not that many people at all. Like 90% of the people left because the rain delay was in like the ninth inning. So most people were gone, but that we were still there. And it was great.
That rain delay was so stupid.
It was stupid, but you know, it is.
Yeah, like they should have just called it. What difference would it have made?
I don't know.
I would imagine the Nationals were like, no, we don't want to call this game because we've been tormenting the Mets this entire game. Let's just torment them a little more.
Yeah, well, they lost. As we wait uneasily for Edwin Diaz to hopefully close out this game, that's also for the show this
week.
He's
two strikes away.
Hopefully.
Cross your fingers, pray, do your victory dance, rain dancing, whatever dancing.
Yep.
You know, go outside three times and spit, turn around, you know, all the things. Just do all the things.
Your shoulder, all that stuff. Ugh. But yeah, in the meantime, you can go to amazingavenue.com, check out all of our fantastic content. We have game recaps every day for you guys. We have, oh my God, did something happen? I heard Gary say something loud. I can't concentrate on my.
Oh no, no out. Okay. In play, no out, but not in play, no out runs.
Okay.
Oh my God. Okay. I can't deal with this.
This is so stressful.
I can't deal with this. You should go to amazingavenue.com. You can and read all of our stuff. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter. Facebook.
We're trying to like extend this. We're trying to extend this out so we can give you the end of the game.
At
our live commentary.
You can follow this show on Twitter at a pod of their own. Heavy breathing. You can follow me on Twitter. I am at Petit PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Cerevich.
Where are you, Kellyanne? You are in the Amazing Avenue comments.
I am in the Amazing Avenue comments. I am not on Twitter. I am not anywhere except Goodreads and Amazing Avenue.
Kellyanne's smarter than all of us because she's not on Twitter.
Yep.
All right. I'm going to watch the rest of this game and cry.
So are the rest of us.
You should subscribe to the podcast wherever you find your podcasts. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go, Mets. And don't forget, there is no crime.